Hello, and welcome to PLG Consulting's Thought Leadership. We specialize in logistics and supply chain consulting for the industrial economy. I'm your host, Chris Bonora, PLG's Director of Client Services. Today, we are delving into the intersection of e-commerce and intermodal rail. Our guest is one of our resident experts on these topics, John Tuttle. John worked for over 20 years in marketing at CSX Transportation, a Class 1 railroad whose network stretches 20,000 route miles over 23 states. He had several roles while working at the CSX, including director of marketing for the railroad's intermodal division. There, he led the pricing and marketing efforts for a $1.6 billion business line. John, thanks for joining us. To kick off, could you explain what intermodal rail is?
Think of it as a network within a network. Most people, when they think of rail, they picture what is considered a merchandise train, most likely. If you're stopped at a siding, cross arms are down, you see this train going by, you see all kinds of mixed cars, from box cars to tank cars, things like that. That's what most people picture when they think of rail. Well, intermodal is very uniform. For the most part, every rail car has containers on it, and a container looks like the semi-trailer that you see going up and down the interstates by truck. And the containers that you see moving on an intermodal train, it's no coincidence they look like a highway truck, because intermodal in its definition is more than one mode. And intermodal, that network within the network, is a container that moves from either a ship to rail or truck to rail or vice versa, or some combination of all of the above. So it's really multimodal service.
How do you think e-commerce is reshaping the supply chain?
E-commerce, I think, has raised the bar significantly, not just a couple inches. I mean, it's much, much higher. The old ways of doing things, if you want to try to compete for those consumers, you're going to lose. Their value sell to the consumer, to you and me, the average household, is that you want something, you come to us, we've got everything you could possibly want, and we'll get it to you tomorrow or in some markets the same day. What that has done is put an immense amount of pressure on the logistics chain from start to finish, because in order to satisfy that need, they've got to get goods close to the consumer, right? So for you to place an order and get it the next day, it's got to be obviously within a day of you. And in most major markets, that's the service that Amazon and others are offering. So they've created more of what I picture more like a spider web.
There seems to be an emphasis placed on speed and less on costs for this type of shipping.
Speed is very important. I mean, it's always been important in the intermodal world, and for many, many years, railroads have been working on becoming more efficient, more reliable, consistent, especially on their intermodal network. But it's under a microscope now. If a transit is 3 days from Los Angeles to Chicago by, you know, an intermodal train yesterday, is it realistic to expect you to cut it to one? What I put more value on, or I always thought our customers should when I worked in the business, was speed to a point, but consistency, reliability. People do not like when things go wrong in an unplanned fashion, especially if you're running a business, jobs are on the line, things like that. So you may not be next day, but if you say, hey, I can get you there in 2 days and I can do it 99% of the time, that carries a lot of weight. That, I think, is the most important selling feature for intermodal, is they continue to raise their standard for service.
What role do intermodal marketing companies play in making intermodal rail available to e-commerce merchants and other shippers?
Well, intermodal as a service offering, I would argue, would be a shadow of itself if it even existed without IMTs. E-commerce, it is fairly new. I wouldn't say it's in the infancy phase at all, but it's probably, if I had to pick it, I would say it's in the juvenile phase. It hasn't grown up yet. I'm going to be real interested to see what things look like 5 to 10 years from now. Even somebody as big as Amazon, I'm not sure they necessarily want to take on the expense of, you know, managing their own intermodal directly without any assistance. So for right now, while they're figuring things out, they have to use the IMCs.
What drove Amazon and other e-retail merchants to start dealing directly with the big railroads?
I think Amazon started it, and everybody else is, to their own extent, getting involved directly with the railroads if they can, in their own form or fashion. But Amazon in particular, it was about control over their own destiny. And what better way to do it than just kind of dip your toe in, start a relationship with the railroads. And, you know, they were talking at the time about controlling everything and throwing out some incredibly large volume numbers that they were going to control, and all incremental, that they, as they grew, they were going to shift it to rail. So it's just a very juicy carrot being dangled in front of the railroads. So they were happy to talk.
Why do you think it is we don't see as many headlines about e-retailers making investments in intermodal rail when compared to what we see in terms of their investments in trucking and air freight?
I think it's because it is more complicated and costly than people thought originally. At the beginning, there was talk about Amazon and even Walmart. I know they have trailers, obviously. I think I remember hearing they had bought a small pool of their own containers. And I know Amazon definitely, I think it was something like 2,500. Not a lot when you consider their size, but nothing since that I've read about or heard through the grapevine. And I believe it's because Amazon in particular, they wanted to, like I said, dip their toe in. If you truly want to understand the process, you've got to manage it end to end. And the best way to do that is to have your own boxes. You know, they wanted to do that. Now, as fast as they seem to have been moving, as ambitious as they were, I would have expected to have seen them placing large orders for new containers by now. So something tells me maybe they decided it, you know, it's better to rent than own, so to speak, at least for the near term. And the model that they've set up where they're using these intermodal marketing companies to really handle all the heavy lifting, that might be meeting all their needs. They're getting their risk diversified. So they're not putting all their eggs in that one supplier basket like they had in the past. And they're also much more knowledgeable and involved in the entire end-to-end service. So instead of just being this helpless recipient that is only told, hey, you know, there are bad snowfalls in the Midwest, so our shipments are going to be delayed 3 days. You know, you feel helpless when that's all you can do is just listen to that message.
What impact has e-commerce had on intermodal rail? And what's the consequences of e-commerce using intermodal to a greater or lesser extent than they are already?
The preponderance of the intermodal market is not e-commerce related, at least not yet. As e-commerce is evolving and business is shifting from, say, an old brick and mortar company that's now out of business, that, well, their market share, consumer market share, has now shifted to Walmart or to Amazon, whoever. There's a time and a place for every shipment, and rail provides a lot of value on that longer haul, higher volume move. But if you're unreliable, nobody's going to use you, not unless they're desperate. So everything's at stake. That bar is just going to constantly be notched up.
Our guest today has been John Tuttle, PLG Senior Consultant and former Director of Marketing for CSX Intermodal. Thanks for listening to Thought Leadership by PLG Consulting. Find out how we can help address your supply chain challenges at www.plgconsulting.com.